Evelyn's testimony on House Bill 3405. Let me open the public hearing on House Bill 3405, and who's Dick? Welcome.
Thank you. Afternoon, Chair. Members of the committee, Dick Yates with Legislative Revenue. Materials you have on House Bill 3405, I've copied several sections of related statutes there, which you may find useful, because the conservation easement is a separate section. The first two pages cover the statutes relating to that. And then what we have is, when forest land is declassified, there may be penalties because it's been assessed at less than market value, or specially assessed previously. Then the difference between the assessed value at real market value or at as other property is taxed and specially assessed value constitutes a basis for the penalties. Those penalties are generally assessed upon declassification, and the bill deals with 308A 706, which defers those assessments under certain conditions. So I've also included a copy of 308703, which is actually the section of the law which imposes the penalties, and then 712, which is controls how they might be imposed at some future time after they've been deferred. So again, to review what the bill does is it defers additional tax assessed upon disqualification. If a conservation easement has been created and the land is managed in compliance with the easement, applies to specially assessed forest land in eastern and western Oregon and the land under the small tract option in western Oregon. Applies to tax years beginning on or after July 1, 2002.
Okay. Representative Demlin, welcome.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. A different committee, Mr.
Okay, we'll close that motion.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. For the record, I am State Representative Richard Devlin from Lake Oswego and Tualatin. I thank the committee for hearing this bill. The idea for House Bill 3405 came from what I believe is an inconsistency in current practice that occurs when a property owner wishes to grant a conservation easement on their property that has qualified for a forest land special assessment. This transaction can result in disqualification from forest land special assessment. Conservation easements are agreements of exchanges of property rights between a landowner and a nonprofit land conservation organization or government agency for the preservation and management of wildlife resources. Oftentimes, the land is pasture land or forest land receiving special assessment for farm or forest use prior to being placed in a conservation easement. Property that is under farmland special assessment will typically remain in that program when a conservation easement is placed. Land under a forest land special assessment, however, can be disqualified when a conservation easement is placed. It is my understanding that under current practice, individuals must pay the 5 years of deferred taxes that accumulated when their property was under a forest land special assessment when they place a restrictive conservation easement in place. This serves as a distinct disincentive for property owners that wish to utilize the option of designating qualified forest land as a conservation easement. Currently, if land is specially assessed and used as farmland prior to being placed in a conservation easement, the additional taxes can be deferred and become a potential lien on the property. If the property has been specially assessed and used as forest land prior to being placed in a conservation easement, additional taxes cannot be deferred under current law. Conservation easements are an important tool in providing voluntary conservation options to private landowners that result in significant public benefit. And I might mention by that way that the people that are granting these conservation easements are also paying a cost themselves in terms of their no longer having the land in forest production. So they are sharing in that public cost. And, of course, they also share in the benefit. I urge the committee to make this change in current law by passing House Bill 3405. I'd like to state for the record that I know you will hear from testimony in favor of the bill. You will hear actually a statement tentatively in favor of the bill from the Association of Oregon Counties. There are amendments that they will seek to the bill that they think that will make it basically work better but accomplish the same goals. I'm fully in favor of those amendments, and I just look forward to the committee's hopeful affirmative consideration of this bill in a work session.
Very good. Questions for Representative Devlin? All right. We'll take the rest of the testimony later, but thank you for coming down.
And Mr. Chairman, that was just a slip.
We'll see. Okay, thanks. We'll close public hearing on House Bill 3405. And just one more change of plan here. I will open a public hearing before we get 2848. I'll open the public hearing on House Bill 3580 to receive Representative Leonard's testimony. Where's Representative Leonard? He stepped out. Where is he? So we can put that out of the way. Gone. In which case, we will not go to 3580. We will go ahead to a public hearing on House Bill 2848. Paul, if you let me know when he comes in. Who's on the way?
Okay.
Representative Merkley, what's he going to testify on? Jeez. He is? Okay. Well, then let's go ahead and open House Bill 2848, public hearing on that. And we change cast and crew. Ed, if you'll give us 2848, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. House Bill 2848 changes a provision of the charitable checkoff program that was adopted last session via House Bill 3560. That provision is it reduces the number of signatures necessary to qualify for listing on the income tax return from 10,000 signatures to 2,500 signatures. The charitable checkoffs is a program whereby taxpayers can contribute to eligible charities by checking boxes on their Oregon income tax returns. They can thereby dedicate part of their tax refund to qualified listed charities. The Department of Revenue is then directed to transfer an equivalent amount to the designated charity selected by the taxpayer. There are currently 5 entities listed on the Oregon income tax return. I provided the back page, second page of the return for your perusal and information. It shows what the 5 entities currently listed are, and in addition, on line 60, it shows an item listed as other charity, and enter code is the instruction given. This is the line in the provision to which this bill especially pertains at this time. So it would reduce the threshold for numbers of signatures required to qualify for a potential listing on the Oregon income tax return.
Okay. Oh, perfect timing. Representative
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and members of the committee. Representative Jeff Murphy, representing Portland. The bill you have before you is, in its unamended form, a single word change. Essentially, 2 years ago, when we first developed an opportunity for nonprofits to appear in the instructions, tax instructions, as opposed to the tax form, we put a very high standard on the number of signatures that needed to be collected as one of several ways of making sure we didn't have hundreds of groups apply, because that was the main concern expressed by those who were currently on the tax form. This is essentially a win-win opportunity. We place before the citizens of the state a convenient opportunity to make a donation to a charitable organization of their choice. And we assist the charitable organizations of the state in publicizing their presence and their mission. This bill, one word change, simply says that instead of having to, there are currently three standards, that you are a nonprofit, that you have $1 million in gross revenue, and that you collect 10,000 signatures. This leaves the first two in place and changes the 10,000 to 2,500. We saw clearly that the hundreds of applicants that opponents of the bill 2 years ago were concerned about didn't materialize. We had two groups that applied, Head Start and Habitat for Humanity, two that qualified. And there would have been a few others probably if we'd had a lower signature standard. But it is certainly a diversion of energy for a nonprofit to be sending its volunteers out to collect 10,000 signatures instead of doing its sending its volunteers out to do the work of the nonprofit in their mission in the community. 2,500 still sets a high standard, still shows that you need community support, but diverts less energy from the mission we're trying to assist. We have in addition a dash one amendment, and hopefully members of the committee have that before them. Mm-hmm. This addresses an anomaly. The anomaly is that the Oregon Veterans Home is, for every practical purpose, a nonprofit organization. It is eligible for charitable contributions under state law and under federal law. It operates for a charitable purpose, but it is not registered as a 501c3. And my first question to those who were part of the Oregon Veterans Home was, can't we simply arrange for you to re-register the home as a 501c3? They had no hesitations about obtaining signatures, no hesitations about meeting the $1 million income requirement. But we found upon looking that they are not allowed to re-register as a 501c3 under the laws that they received grants under from the federal government to build the home. And if they were to become a 501c3, they would have to return to the federal government grants that they obtained for this mission, which would be obviously very counterproductive. So as we worked through this, and there was also another issue, which is technically the way that grants come through to the Oregon Veterans Home and donations come through. It's not clear that with a government agency, that those are considered to be income, just kind of a technicality of the word income. So we had those two issues. So we have solved that in the simplest possible way by saying that they must still obtain 2,500 signatures. Their gross income, or whatever you would like to call it, flow of resources, is $1 million, so they meet that standard. And they certainly then fit into a charitable organization list, but we have called them out explicitly because of the problem of fitting the 501c3 definition. So these two changes would be appropriate, very much in concert with the intention of the law passed 2 years ago, which has seen two additional groups be able to be available for donations, and I think has served the people of the state well. Thank you for the chance to testify.
Questions for Representative Merkley? Representative Witt.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Van Neer, fully in support of the Dash 1 amendments. Is that correct?
Mr. Chair and Representative Witt, absolutely.
Okay,
very good amendment.
Anybody else? All right, thank you very much. I don't see Representative Leonard back yet, so let's go ahead with the witnesses on 2848. Tom Cowan and Walter Cruz, why don't you come on up together? Please begin just by identifying yourselves for the record, and then whoever wants to start can start.
Mr. Chair, my name is Tom Cowan. I'm the Deputy Director with the Oregon Department of Veterans Affairs, and with me is Robert Fleming, who also works for the department. I appreciate the opportunity to speak to you today in support of House Bill 2848 and the Dash 1 amendments offered by Representative Merkley. House Bill 2848 with the amendment would offer the citizens of Oregon an opportunity to donate a portion of their